Last case this morning, Perry versus City of Chicago. Mr. Larson?
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eric Larson, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellant, Devaris Perry. On September 14, 2007, Mr. Perry was shot twice, once in the left thigh and once in the lower back, by Officer Bartel Keithley of the Chicago Police Department. Mr. Perry brought claims for the use of excessive force against Mr. Keithley under 42 U.S.C. 1983 and malicious prosecution claims under state law against Mr. Keithley and the City of Chicago. At the jury trial, there were at least two reversible errors. And I would like to speak first to that with respect to the alias and gang affiliation testimony offered. This court...
You know, when you start to talk about the alias, it seems to me that the court didn't allow mention of prior use of an alias during other arrests, not because an alias is so prejudicial, but because the prior arrests are prejudicial. I mean, what is so prejudicial about learning that he used an alias in this arrest as well as the earlier arrest? I mean, Ricky Johnson's pretty benign to begin with. I mean, when I think about some of the aliases that, you know, flow through this building, you know, like we had one a few years ago, Sir Pimps-a-Lot. Well, you know, like that's not an alias. Jury to hear, but what is wrong with Ricky Johnson?
Well, thank you for your question, Your Honor. I would respond that the connection between the use of the alias itself and the prior arrests allowed in the context of this arrest then associates criminal behavior, alleged criminal behavior on the part of Mr. Perry in connection with the incident that was the subject of the civil jury trial. So it's not necessarily the use or the meaning of the alias, but rather the existence of the alias itself, and the fact that the City of Chicago, that the appellants were connecting that with respect to his prior criminal history, which under the motion in limine granted by the court in part, and then further explained at sidebar during the jury trial, was limited to prior arrests. To the 2000 arrest, the 2007 arrest that was the subject of the jury trial. Moving on, with
the
respect to
prior to the one that was involved in this incident.
Yes, Your Honor. I think as the record will show, that pertinent arrest was in 2004, the one that testimony was allowed with respect to. Although the error here was allowing the alias testimony to come in with respect to the 2007 arrest. After Mr. Perry was shot. With respect to the gang affiliation testimony, I would posit that this, combined with the alias testimony, creates the prejudicial error here. With respect to gang affiliation, there was a motion in limine granted by the district court that barred the City of Chicago and Mr. Keithley from eliciting testimony with respect to Mr. Perry's alleged gang affiliation. Contrary to this, the appellee's lawyers asked questions that elicited testimony with regard to the presence of gangbangers in the apartment where Mr. Perry first encountered officers Keithley and Watts. At that point, there was a sidebar where the judge where Magistrate Schenkier explained to all the parties that they were encroaching very close to what he determined to be the line that the motion in limine had addressed, and he even brought forth the witness at the time, Officer Watts, to explain to him that he was going into areas that had been explicitly barred by the judge's order. Nonetheless, somewhat inexplicably, the judge denied or rather overruled, I should say, Mr. Perry's counsel's objections to the line of questioning and allowed that testimony to come in.
Was the motion in limine directed to gang membership, though, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I think... It,
so this wasn't really directly to gang membership. It was alluded to gangbangers being in the building.
Well, not just in the building, but within this apartment itself. And I think the fair implication and potentially the only implication that would be drawn from that testimony is that the people who were in the apartment were associated with gangs or gang members. So I believe that the allowing testimony as to gangbangers to come in is the de facto same as allowing it to the officer
well,
to say.
Well, it's a close call, but we give the district judge an opportunity to interpret or the magistrate to interpret his or her motion, or, you know, they're the ones that granted the motion. Let me apparently knew what they intended to keep out, and he said it was on the line. But he said it didn't cross it.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. And with respect to the second grounds for the second error.
Let's go back for a minute on this. The officer only said the word gangbanger once, and then there was later testimony that Apartment 501 was a haven for criminals hiding from the police, and crack cocaine was found sitting in plain view. There was no objection to that testimony, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. There was no objection at the time to that testimony. I would posit that the...
And the only reason I raise that is trying to figure out whether there was undue prejudice when this gangbanger reference was made. And so when you put it in context, I don't know that it was.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think with respect to... the reference to gangs in general, I think it has a uniquely prejudicial effect in the context of this case. As you say, the deck was somewhat stacked in the sense that this was at the Ida B. Wells project, which there was much testimony that came in with respect to criminal activity that happened there. And I think in the context of the entire record of the case, with respect to this particular situation with gang-related testimony, you know, there was a very discriminating decision made on behalf of Mr. Perry's trial counsel to seek to exclude this type of evidence with the understanding that it would be unduly prejudicial in the sense that there was other sort of damning evidence that may come in allegations with respect to criminal activity.
Was there a request by counsel for a limiting instruction when this term was used before the jury?
Yes, Your Honor. He did. Mr. Perry's counsel did request a limiting instruction at the time that the testimony came out. That was when they had the sidebar, and then once the sidebar was concluded, Magistrate Shankier overruled the objection with no further comment to the jury.
Does the record tell us anything about the uniformed guards that were present on the first day of trial? How many? Were they armed? How close were they to Mr. Perry? Any of it?
Your Honor, unfortunately not. The only reference to the uniformed guards is the statement at the end of the first day of testimony where Magistrate Shankier says, civilian clothing tomorrow. I'm paraphrasing. But to the extent...
He ordered the guards to wear civilian clothes, didn't he?
Yes, Your Honor, and they did. From my understanding, not from the record, but from speaking with my client, is that throughout the rest of the trial that they did wear civilian clothes.
You know, before you sit down, we need to make sure we have a final judgment here. The city says that the claims in count two against Watts for excessive force and against both of the officers for failure to intervene, and also the claim in count three for false arrests were abandoned. Is that true?
Yes, Your Honor. That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
I see that my initial time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Sorensen.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Mr. Perry had a full and fair opportunity to try to a jury his claims that Officer Keithley shot him without justification. The jury rejected that claim, and Mr. Perry now seeks a new trial, but his claims of error lack all merit. As for the two evidentiary issues, there was the issue of alias evidence and the one stray reference to gangbangers. Judge Williams pointed out correctly, I think, the ruling about the objection to the alias evidence, the reason that wasn't there were limitations on what could be brought out about prior arrests. The concern was, as in many cases, that evidence of Mr. Perry's other criminal activities apart from the offense for which he was convicted and the incident underlying this, you know, would taint him in the eyes of the jury. But the evidence of the alias that came in was that he used the alias Ricky Johnson when he was arrested before his conviction in 2004. Anything that happened in connection with the incident underlying this case is not part of Mr. Perry's criminal background. All the facts around that, you know, go to his claims. His arrest was a predicate to his claims. And something that we did point out in our brief is when Mr. Perry was asked whether he used an alias when he was arrested after the shooting involving Mr. Keithley, he said no, and there actually wasn't anything to contradict him, and Mr. Perry's never explained how that one question that he answered no to could have even prejudiced him, and certainly it wasn't error or any violation of the motion in limine to allow that one question.
I want to ask you something about your brief, because on page 5, you noted that the officers had already testified that the housing complex was rife with gang activity. You know,
correct.
Okay. In response to whose questions did that testimony come? Did the plaintiff elicit?
I believe Officer Keithley was called as part of Mr. Perry's case in chief, and he was originally questioned about the shooting by plaintiff's counsel as an adverse witness. And then I believe it was probably in response to defense counsel's questions on cross-examination, but there was no objection to the general testimony about the housing project being rife with gang activity. And Officer Keithley, he testified before Officer Watts, which is where the objection comes into Officer Watts' testimony. Officer Keithley said, you know, we got a tip that this particular apartment was being used as a run-to by drug dealers to store guns and drugs. It was when Officer Watts testified, he happened to use the word gangbangers in addition. That was really the only difference between their testimony, and it was not substantively different. So that one, you know, additional word, and both officers' testimony was about a general tip that they got. It was not, you know, it was never tied to Mr. Perry. It was, you know, it wasn't verified. It was the general testimony about criminal activity in the apartment was necessary to explain why the officers were going there in the first place.
Did the testimony indicate, as they learned it, theoretically the apartment was vacant?
That's correct. Well, the officers went to the management office and found out that there wasn't supposed to be anyone in the apartment at all.
There was a woman there who had a reputation of finding vacant apartments to stay in because of her drug habit.
Right, and there were drugs found in the apartment as well.
And let me ask you on this, shouldn't the court have given a limiting instruction on that once the officer made that statement, the gangbanger, or made reference to that term?
I don't think that stray, I mean, the stray reference that, to, you know, to gangbangers didn't add meaningfully to what Mr. Officer Keithley had already testified to. It may have only called attention to it. And again, the tip wasn't tied to Mr. Perry. It was, you know, this is what we have information is going on in this apartment. The court did, you know, caution Officer Watts not to talk anymore about gang activity. I think that was out of an excess of caution. It's not because there was any implication that the tip had anything to do with Mr. Perry being a gang member. And again, the motion in limine did just bar reference to Mr. Perry's gang affiliation. Plaintiff's counsel didn't ask in a motion in limine, didn't ask specifically to exclude any reference to gangbangers. And given the evidence that the complex as a whole was rife with gang activity, that this particular apartment was being used as, you know, a stash house, basically, for guns and drugs, this, you know, one reference to gangbangers didn't add meaningfully.
So you opposed it then at sidebar? At sidebar, because counsel said at sidebar there was a request to give a limiting instruction when the term came out.
I actually don't recall specifically. I can check it in the record, and we'd be happy to follow up with, a letter on that, because I don't remember exactly. I do remember there was a discussion about it. I don't know if there was a specific request for limiting instruction.
But it was just gang banging. It wasn't membership in a particular gang, right?
Oh, not at all. No, it was just, and again, there was the mention of the apartment itself being used by drug dealers, so saying...
Yeah, but, Perry has a point about the testimony regarding gangbangers in apartment 501, because that's not the same thing as saying that there are gangs in the housing complex, for example, because it's very specific. The apartment that he was found in.
I would agree that there's a difference between talking about the complex as a whole and the apartment, but I don't agree that there's a meaningful difference between saying that in the apartment, that the apartment's being used as a stash house. I mean, it's being used by criminals, whether those criminals are... whether you call them gangbangers or not, doesn't meaningfully.
Well, as I say, it's where he was found.
It's where he was found, but there was no objection.
Very specific.
Yes, but there was no objection to the other evidence about where he was found, including that there was a substantial quantity of drugs found there.
And there was no objection when the specifically 501 testimony came in, correct? Apartment 501 testimony.
No, there was not. If the court has no further questions, we'd ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you.
How much time is it? You have 1 minute, Mr. Horrett.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I would direct the court's attention to page 700 of the transcripts or appellant's appendix, page 34, and I will read from it. The testimony from Officer Watts said, and they told me about the gangbangers were running the guns and the drugs up into 527 East Browning. They gave me apartment 501. Mr. Perry's counsel, objection, judge, and if it's allowed, I'd ask for a limiting instruction. So I would say that testimony was directed at apartment 501, not just generally at the apartment complex. And Mr. Perry's counsel clearly requested a limiting instruction. At that point, the sidebar was held, and the court then overruled the objection on page 705.
And was there argument by the state that a limiting instruction should not be given, since you have the transcript there?
I don't know whether they specifically argued that the limiting instruction should not be given, but there was general discussion. I see that my time is up.
Let me ask you this just before you go. Were there any evidence of sales out of that apartment? Drug sales?
With respect to narcotic sales that...
Yes, taking place in 501.
I don't specifically recall as I stand here in the context of the transcripts, but we can certainly supplement if Your Honor would like.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement, and that concludes the cases for today. The court will be in recess. Not according to this. You were not appointed, were you, Mr. Larson?
Yes, I was appointed.
Oh, well, our crack staff didn't indicate that. Thank you very much for your fine representation of your client.